4, 4, 4, 4, 4. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the EG Pod of Thunder with your boy, the young light-skinned Keith Sweat, with my guy returning for his finally in the studio podcast, my guy, head coach of Central High School, my guy, Mike Washington. Let's get it, baby.
What up, what up, what up, what up? Glad to be here, man.
And my guy, oh, I'm ruining the applause. And my guy right here, my guy Darren from Evelyn Edits has come to my guy, Mike, to talk about his first episode dropped last week, A Tale of a Night, Rhode Island football story right here. It's going to be in the my guy, Darren. Here it is right here. You got the shoot. My guy, Darren, so we're talking off camera a little bit. You're the guy behind the camera. So this is all you, the graphics, everything's appreciation to you.
Yep, off the muscle. So pretty much season one, I filmed that pretty much all by myself. And it's funny because I had very limited experience when I started filming this thing. I think I was only probably 5 months into filming. And that was when Coach Mike hit me up on IG and was like, hey, I got this idea about this documentary. I came down at PCTA, sat next to him at his office, and he's telling me all this stuff. And I'm like, yo, this dude's out of his mind.
I feel like that's the first impression Mike gives a lot of people.
For sure. Yeah,
the first time I met Mike actually was for the first time for the podcast. I don't think you could even notice if you watched that pod. It seemed like we knew each other forever.
Yep.
And I was with Alex first. That was supposed to be one-on-one with Alex. And then Mike drives by, and he's like, yo, what are y'all doing? I'm like, Alex, yo, come on, do the podcast with us. He's like, all right, say less. Came. Did a podcast. That was a funny one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The most memorable skit from that one, unplanned, obviously, all improv, was the white people eating, putting ketchup on their rice. That was the hit of that pod. But so 5 months in, first of all, what got you introduced into the film life? Because I got a little background in it, the video, the photo editing and stuff like that. We're just talking about before we went out live.
Yep.
So what got you into that? Cause that's a whole other world.
So I'll say, my twin brothers, they're playing football out right now in California. They're out of JUCO. They were playing football at Johnson High School. In the previous year, I think it was their junior year, they were kind of looking to get filmed, to get recruited and things like that. And I guess the guy that had filmed previously kind of just, slacked off, and they were missing a whole bunch of film. So their senior year, they were like, hey, we need somebody to film our games. So I had picked up this little $200 Panasonic camcorder. It's like a handheld one, really cheap. The quality is pretty low. And I filmed every single one of the games that season. And it was like, hey, man, we want you to make us some highlight tapes and some mixtapes. So I went ahead and did that, posted them on the gram. And the feedback I was getting was crazy. Kids would hit me up and saying, yo, I need a mix. I need a mix. I need this. I need that. So from there, it kind of just took off. Now I'm doing stuff for law firms, commercials.
That's dope, bro. Congrats.
And the photography, businesses, and then the documentary. So, yeah.
So, it's the only thing with me with, I was doing sports photography. Same thing for, my brother. And the only thing with that is, though, when the kids hit you up, they're like, yo, can you come to the game? I'll give you
$10.
$10? Are you shitting me? It doesn't even cover the gas. Never mind the time to sort through the photos and everything.
Yeah.
Sports photography is tough, but if you can get into it, man, it's great.
Yeah.
And I just finished watching that first episode. And it was great. We're going to touch upon it, obviously, throughout this podcast. But Mike, on the other end of that DM, what made my guy Darren here stick out to you?
So he did a mini docuseries for his brothers, like he's saying. And the year before, I wanted to actually shoot the documentary, and I had reached out to a gentleman. He works for, CBS. I got connected with him through some friends, and we sat down, we talked about it, we came up with the outline, but it just wasn't working with his schedule because he got a new job at the TV station, and it just wasn't working. So the year we won the championship was actually when I wanted to shoot the documentary. And I was still assistant coach at the time, but those are my guys. And I think most of the guys I came in with, that was their kind of graduating class. So I want to do something good for them. I knew we'd be good. I didn't know we'd win the Super Bowl, but I kind of just had the foresight to shoot one, and then it didn't work out. It fell through. So I kind of forgot about it a little bit, and then that next year started to come up, and then I don't know how I ran across Darian's page, but I did. And he had his brothers in the little highlights, and it was it was pretty good, pretty detailed. And I'm like, yo, we're looking for the same type of story. I didn't expect him to be this good either. If you see the production, if you see the first episode, you'll think it was shot by 20 different people, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, man, I kind of just reached out after I see him do those videos with his brothers, and the rest is history.
I mean, I know how it is in the video side, so you must be spending like hours of time together during this time, because you guys got shoots in the house, you guys got shoot in the car, film, the game, post game. Got in, how much like time with the entire season? Was it summertime too? Like, how long was like the film duration of that?
I mean, we had the whole season. Then we had some interviews during the season. We had some post interviews. I mean, I was editing forever, bro. And then, like I said, too, I didn't really have the experience. So I was still learning, going through the process as I was filming, as I was editing. So you'll kind of see with the documentary as episodes go on, like things will look even better. Yeah, it's a process, bro. And I'm a very picky person. So I like to take a lot more time than other people do, for sure.
So, I mean, hearing that, so what was... Obviously, we're seeing the finished product now. Episode 1 and 2 will be out by the time you guys are watching this. Depending when you're watching it, it might be the entire thing out. But, you know, so what was the initial vision of this documentary?
To be honest, man, I didn't even really know. Like, we did this off of the muscle. So I think they were already in season. They had already played one game by the time Mike had hit me up and said, hey, let's do this documentary. So we didn't have any type of narrative story, or we're going to do it this way, or let's plan it. I was literally just showing up to practice in the games and filming, and the story just began writing itself. And as once you see episode 2, the story gets even crazier. It's a roller coaster of a documentary. It's up and down. I was just there to capture it all, man. Coach Mike and the kids just did their thing, and the story really wrote itself. Yeah.
Right. Like you're saying, it was just... It's something, the storyline kind of just happened organically, whereas like initially, like, you know, you don't really think about producing or directing, you know what I'm saying, the documentary when you're the one kind of being shot. You're kind of just thinking about being in front of the camera, the kids being in front of the camera, and kind of just doing what you do. So, you know, kind of when we kind of wrapped everything up and me and him, we kind of had to do like our first production meeting. And then that's when it was like, oh my God. And then we kind of start lining things up. And that's when you kind of see the story kind of come to life when, you know, the season was over and we got to kind of reflect and look back and say, all right, how do we want to kind of master this thing? So it was kind of something that I think season one is just so good because it happened so organically, and like it just was so unforced that like it just turns into a beautiful film. I can't wait till everybody sees all 8 episodes. I think you won't really grasp and get the whole thing until you're able to kind of watch it chronologically. So I think once that 8th episode finally drops and like you're kind of able to go back like a Netflix series and kind of watch 1 through 8, I think you're going to be like, God damn, these two guys are crazy.
Just a question, I like the format of that. So is it more like a Hard Knocks where every week is week 1, week 2, week 3? Or is it like, the Last Dance where it kind of goes back and forth type?
Nah, it's chronological. So week 1, week 2, week 3. Yep.
Gotcha. Yes, I mean, if you guys saying it gets better and better, I can imagine, because episode 1 was pretty damn good.
Right.
Like, I'll tell you guys from the, you know, the viewer side of it. Obviously, you go get an introduction to people. I guess on that aspect, did you guys know, you know, filming week 1, did you guys know who were like the talkers? Because you said, I forget his name, you're like, oh, all right, talk. And then you got the camera shy guy, and you're like, oh, this guy always talks, the camera's not here. Yeah. So did you guys have did you as a coach have like, all right, this guy's going to be this guy, the episode, or is it just like everyone's going to film, then afterwards?
Yeah, it was kind of like, and like what we're saying about the, like how it happens organically, like that episode, that first episode, Darren kind of just was going to patrol the school, and we were kind of just going to kind of let things happen. So that was literally one of the hallway kids. And I'm like, now you got a camera on you, do something.
Yeah. He's
like, So
I think you did that to me for someone else too. At Breakthrough, you're like, all right, do that kid, he can talk a lot. I got him, he was a mute. Yeah. I'm like, I thought Mike said he could talk. This kid was like, ah.
Yeah. There was some kids, man. Like, I don't know. When I met some of the kids, there was some, I feel like the thing about this document is going to be a character in there, especially if you played football, that you can relate to. For example, for me, Armis was like one of the main characters I related to. So I kind of gravitated towards him. So
is that the kid that was like, don't say they're great. They're good.
Yep.
You can already tell you got the personality for it.
Yep.
Young twin.
So he was like a character that I gravitated towards too. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to try to get a little bit more of his story. And so, yeah, it kind of, as I was filming, I kind of just picked up on certain characters and knew, okay, like this kid, I need to hear him talk and get him, set him aside for an interview at some point.
And some kids naturally kind of have the personality for TV. You can tell, like Ty and Armis, you see they're kind of two guys who they're always going to find their way kind of in front of the camera, saying something funny, saying something slick on the side. So those two guys are just kind of natural camera guys. And then you kind of got the low-key guys like Judah, who plays a big part in the story, you know, eventually, and will kind of roll out. And he's kind of super shy. And, like, the cameras, you don't want to say it's forced to go on him, but he's a kid who now, who's a shy kid who has to kind of now come out of his shell because he just happens to be kind of one of the stars of the documentary. So it's cool kind of seeing that dynamic of shy kids and super confident kids and kind of seeing how they blend in the documentary.
As a coach, though, how were you dealing with, like, the not getting someone to be like Ochocinco and being like a distraction? Like, were you seeing two different sides to a kid when the camera's on him and then in practice no camera?
I honestly feel like I think that's one of the good things about Central is just, like, our environment is just so free that the kids never have to be somebody that they're not, like, during any point. Like, good, bad, funny, toxic, whatever it may be, the kids are always kind of comfortable in their skin. And, like, that's what I pride myself on and having that type of environment. So it was super natural when the cameras got around. And, like, even to this day when there's a camera around, the kids just act like them. May do a little bit extra, but they're extra anyways, you know what I'm saying? So it's never really nothing too crazy.
So, just one of the questions I had previously was, say this was a Hendricken or LaSalle. Obviously, they're not gonna want the kids to swear. Coach is probably not going to be able to swear on camera. How are you navigating that? Are you, like, letting the kids, like you said, that freedom of swearing, being their natural self? Or are you like, hey, kind of tone down on that? Because I didn't really hear the kids swear on the first episode, at least.
Right.
More than the coaches.
It's them. Happens. You know what I'm saying? I think the main part of this whole thing is we want to capture the reality of what we do, the reality of where we at. And I've never been the coach to sugarcoat anything. I've never been a person to sugarcoat everything. And, like, what you see is what you get. That's Coach Mike today, tomorrow, in front of the President of the United States. That's who, you know, you're going to get. So it was never really a thought process to kind of censor myself. I think football is a gladiator sport. I think anybody who watches football, understands football, or have played football, understands the seriousness, the tone, and the intensity that comes with the game. I think you'll feel some type of way kind of if you're an outsider looking in a little bit and, you know, but the kids talk way worse, you know what I'm saying, on a regular basis. So it's something that's kind of, it's just a normalcy. And, you know, we're not a private institution, we're a public institution. And, you know, again, I just allow the kids to be them. You know, I'm going to be me, you know, I'm not on there, you know, MF in every single sentence. And, you know, I'm not out there berating kids or anything like that. But, you know, I do get after it a little bit. And, you know, I got a sailor's mouth, like, kind of just when I'm talking. So that's just kind of the nature of the sport and the gig.
Did you ever find yourself holding yourself back because you knew there's a camera there?
No. I think that started to happen later, kind of like season two, some foresight. Yes, there will be another season.
Cliffhanger right there.
Yeah. But, like, initially, no. Like, initially, a lot of times, like, I don't remember Darian being there, but, like, he did such a good job of being in the cut and catching moments. And, like, so I'd forget I was mic'd up sometimes, you know what I'm saying? And Darian would kind of just be in the cut all the way down there. And you don't realize, like, he's getting everything, the voice sync with the video, and you don't realize it. So a lot of times you don't even realize the camera's on you, and you don't really realize it until you kind of go back to editing and you see, like, damn, dude, you really caught everything.
Yeah, man. Like, that's the one thing I'll say with filming this. Like, the kids were still focused. Like, they were into the game when I was there. Yeah, no distractions. Like, I don't think it impacted their performance at all. Yeah.
So what do you think? He's saying what – he give you credit right there. What do you think makes you be good at this position right here? For, like, in the documentary, what makes a good videographer in these instances?
I think you just have to be constantly filming so you don't miss anything from experience. And then also, too, capturing the emotion so the audience can see, and then identifying those people who you're filming that can relate to somebody in the audience, for sure.
I mean, since you gave that little foresight of season two there, what did you learn from season one that now you're applying to season two to make better shots, stuff like that?
So with season two, like I said, with season one, like, I kind of lacked some experience. So shout out Local Visions, Wayne, that's my man. We brought him in for season two. I knew nothing about color grading for season two. Also, like, certain settings with my camera. So you'll definitely see an improvement with the way the documentary just looks when season two comes out. Thanks to him, he helped me with a lot of things. So special shout out to Wayne for
sure. Shout out my guy Wayne. Shout out
Logan and more cameras. So we got a lot of guys that helped us film and get multiple angles too, which mm-hmm. would be really good, fun to watch.
Shout out to Danielson. Shout out to D Curly.
Yep.
Shout out to all those guys, man, who kind of really helped, kind of pitch in. Shout out to B Dot. Shout out to anyone who kind of just helped pitch in kind of during this time.
Shout out to Wifey. She was there filming too.
Yep.
Yep.
And get back to talking about this documentary. I haven't got the little trailer here yet. We can give a little trailer underneath for us right now. Uh-oh.
See, we grew up in a time where after your football season, you wouldn't see your coach until the season started again. See, here in Providence, there's no saviors. There's no blueprint. There's no resources. But this time is different. It's time for the next generation to break the generational curse that we fell from. It's time to inspire the next generation to inspire the next generation. We start in our own narrative. This is real. This is us. This is our story. This is Central.
Don't hit the line of scrimmage!
Aye.
To put 11 and a half on the ball all night long. Let's go. Good, there you go. Good.
Yeah.
Do you really want to live in mediocrity your whole life, fellas? Do you really, fellas?
My plan is just to get out of here, just go somewhere nice, make sure that my last name and my name as a person just lives up to what I want it to be.
It's like, if we beat this team, it would change the narrative for pretty much anybody in the state, in the city, especially in the city of Providence, Washington.
It hurts a little bit.
Come on the side, guys. Come on the side.
My expectations for the program and where I want to take the program to is to be the number one team in the state.
Show me! Show me another defending chance! Show me you want to whoop some ass! Show me! All I do is hear it! All I do is hear it! Show me!
Out of the cannon, he is touchdown!
That's what I'm talking about! That's what I'm talking about!
So that's a trailer right there for a tail of the night.
Yo, that's, I'm telling you, everybody's going to be saying that when we get to that episode.
I got Mike. Shout out to Mike.
So the trailer right there, we're finally talking about that right there. So any highlights from that trailer right there you want to speak on, Mike? I mean, there's two episodes played so far, so I don't know what spoilers you want to give, but.
Right. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing was that beginning is the narration. I thought that part was definitely necessary because we truly did grow up in a time, and Darian knows, like, I mean, even you, F.
Of course.
There was literally no coach after football. You know what I'm saying? There wasn't no off season. There wasn't no weight room. There wasn't no program. There wasn't no structure. There wasn't no next. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to, at least our generation, to kind of just feel that part because it's something that we just didn't have. So I mean, just being able to kind of fill that void, you know what I'm saying, and kind of be able to shoot a movie and to put kids in position, like that was just big for me. So just that beginning narration was just something that kind of spoke to me, like spoke to my spirit for me to even do it.
For the 1.1K who've watched the first episode, I'm sure they're thinking the same thing I'm thinking. So what made you, or curious at least, what made you want to come back? Because the principal, I think, said that when you'd be in the Midwest, you'd come back to Prov, and you'd still take your time out to come to Central, you know, talk to the students, you know, show some love over there. So what made you want to do that in the first place? Because, you know, some people don't ever go back to their high school, so never mind, go there, end up working for their high school again.
So what really changed my life, because, I mean, after I left, I mean, I was gone, and I didn't want to look back. I went out to Minnesota, and what happened was is, you know, I went to junior college, and you know, I've been through a whole lot in junior college, and I finally got to the Division II level, the collegiate level. I'm at university, and finally, kind of getting acclimated. You know, I go from last on the depth chart to first on the depth chart, and like now, I'm about to start my first collegiate season as a starting running back, and 2 weeks into camp, I tear my ACL, non-contact injury, and you know my life goes up in flames. I've never had a major injury in my life. A lot of small injuries, muscle, you know, tears, hamstring, stuff like that. But I've never had a major injury. I never had a knee injury. I've never been out, you know, for a season like that. So it kind of forced me to come home. I had to take the semester off because I had nobody to take care of me post-surgery. So, you know, I kind of went into depression like most people do after experiencing an injury like that. And I want to say a few weeks in my rehab, something just spoke to me and said, you know, stop by Central, stop by, go see Coach Rios, go see the team, talk, and, you know, just see what's up. And I went to their game, and that's how it started. I went to their game, and we had dogs, Ty, Silva, DeAndre, Franklin, my boy Tony Reeves, Demetrius O'Connor. We had a crazy team, and I remember we scored, I think, 6 points against Shea or something crazy. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like,
I can do better than
that. Yeah, I'm like, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, my head coach, he's, you know, he was the same coach who coached me. And, you know, times change. And, you know, you can see that. That becomes evident. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just looks like he needed some help with the offense. He needed some tweaks and to make it a little faster. And I seen that game, and like I said, we lost to Shea and everything, and you know, you can't be losing to no Shea.
Mm-hmm. Well, Freddie ain't happy about that.
Yeah. Freddie
ain't say about that.
Shout out to Cuz, you already know. but after that, I kind of reached out to him, like, hey, coach, man, like, you know, I see some holes, I seen a few things that, you know, you can do. I love to come and help, because like I said, that game literally, like, boiled my blood watching it, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm coach's favorite. I'm his best. I'm like his son. So, you know, he couldn't say no. And, like, right then and there, I became an assistant. And I got on as a volunteer. And he actually allowed me to take over part of the offense and kind of create an own package and kind of create my own verbiage. And so I started coaching in that off time when I had the ACL. And I'll never forget it. We had Moses Brown in the playoff. And like I said, this team was absolutely would have been Super Bowl champions. We had Moses Brown in the playoffs in the 2015, and I remember I wanted to do an extra practice for our install to make sure kind of we were on point for the playoff game. I'll never forget it, man. Nobody showed up. I'll never forget it.
That's crazy, because, like, just speaking on the other end, I went to Saints. My brother went Hendrickson.
Yep.
That would never happen.
Right.
That would never happen.
For sure. And it was kind of the thing that said, like, and I don't want to say I respect it or I get it, but I'm somebody who's, like, as practical as I can be. At the end of the day, I'm a guy who just showed up in week 8 or 9, who is now trying to magically demand all this greatness, all this excellence, and all this other stuff. And quite frankly, you know, I don't have the rapport with the guys. And, you know, they know me as Mike Washington, coaches, the, you know, the best player, blah, 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 blah. But they didn't really have, per se, I don't want to say the respect or the foresight to really see what I was doing. So, you know, we end up, but here's what else I can remember. You know, I think we practiced the next day or something like that. And I told them, like, you know, I'm going to step back. Like, I'm going to let you guys experience kind of what it is to not take things serious. And I remember, like, it was yesterday. I was like, it won't be me who's crying, guys. Like, I'm letting you guys know now. Like, you guys think you guys hurt me for not showing up. And I'm like, yo. And sure enough, man, we lost that game, I think, by like a point. Or I think we ran into the field goal kicker, and it was something I thought it could have been avoided with the practice, and if we had a little more offense, you know, there's only 3 days to prep in a week, so we lost, and just like I said, everybody was crying, and everybody had their heads down, and yeah. It was kind of the genesis of, like, Mike, you need to come back and show these kids how to do it right, you know what I'm saying, and that was kind of like the birth of the thought, and from there, you know, I finished my collegiate career, and, you know, I ended up hurt again, but, like, it's something that stuck in my head. I was like, After that loss, I had it in my head. I'm like, I'm going to come back and pour into these kids and give these kids what I never had. So that's kind of the story of how I started to look to come back.
Nice. That's dope, man. Isn't it crazy how, like, football can just change someone's life? Like, I think football means more than just a sport.
Sure.
And, like, and I talk to people, they'll be like, you know, people who are not into sport, they just don't get why I'm so into football. And they're like, it's just hard to explain unless you're into it. And it's really It's really just different. How about you? Are you into a big football guy or just doing it because of that?
No. I've been playing. Well, I played since I was 9. I went to Tolman. So, you know, Shea was our cross-time rival.
That's why I agreed with the Shea comment.
Yeah, man. So, went to Tolman. Played running back. Actually played D-line on defense.
That, what a combination that is. D-line and running back.
It's crazy. And then played a little bit in college. So I played at Southern Virginia University in AIA school. And then a little bit of semi-pro out here in Rhode Island. Played for Southern New England Rage. They're no longer existent. And then Rhode Island Cowboys. I don't think they're around anymore either. But, yeah, I've been around the sport for a long time. I love it. And I think being a football player and actually, like, doing this capture in a documentary, you kind of know more of what to look for. And, like, you relate to the coaches anymore. You know what needs to go in a documentary and what is nonsense. So, yeah.
Definitely, it must feel good, too. You're right, Mike, where it's not like Hard Knocks where you have to worry about getting set up. Like, oh, I'm worried about saying something, then he's going to put that out there for, you know, like, blackmail.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's good. That me and D, we got a great relationship. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's been a few times where he caught me saying some shit.
Yeah, man.
And he'll like, just laugh at him. Be like, yeah. He'll laugh at him. Be like, that's not going in there. Yeah. he'll know automatically, like, what's over the top. And, you know, I don't get over the top a lot. But, again, when you're mic'd up, you know what I'm saying, you kind of just say shit off the cuff. But D's really good at, you know, knowing what to put out there and what not to put out there.
Looking back on it now, is there anything that didn't make the cut that we can blooper alert here? You got bloopers, anything, D? Bloopers. I can take this out, too, if it's too crazy.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, there's definitely bloopers, and I think something me and Mike has talked about is, like, possibly putting on something on YouTube after the documentary, like, after all 8 seasons, after all 8 episodes out there, where we'll put some bloopers that we had or some scenes that didn't make it. It probably won't be, like, anything outrageous, but something I'll give y'all a little laugh. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of BS cut scenes, yeah. And, you know, me talking shit to the guys in the corner, or a lot of the guys bantering kind of back and forth. And
got too far.
Yeah. But nothing crazy. I say it's innocent. I say the most mature part of this whole thing is probably just me cursing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think it's pretty like harmless, and it's pretty like, like I said, it's just fun, like fun spirited.
Yeah, great group of guys, definitely. For sure. Yeah,
it's definitely good having that, because even when I do stuff for Breakthrough, I know SD knows I'm not gonna set him up or anything like that. So I was doing a silent interview actually for a Central kid, and off the rip, it was not good. I was like,
help it.
I was like, oh,
is this Mike?
Yes. Mike couldn't. Yes, it was Mike. It's off the rip. I was like, all right, I had to cut him off. It's like, all right, restart.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna put that out. I'm not trying to set you up.
Which mic was it?
Torre.
Off the rip.
I was like, all right, let's reset this. I can't put that out there. Don't swear. He's like, oh, my bad. I was like, I got you, bro. But it was good, though. Uh-huh. The first one definitely was not family friendly right there.
Nah, they get it from me, unfortunately. Man. I'm sorry.
I love that kid, though. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Good kid. Yeah. 5 years.
Yeah, you see, he's in this, right?
Yeah.
He did that one-handed.
That's him.
Oh, that's him.
Yeah,
he was a sophomore, so it's so crazy. Yeah. You know, you had him as a senior. Mm-hmm. I remember that interview. And he was just a little baby sophomore in that video. He's one of the kids I had for 5 years, ever since the 8th grade. So,
did you see that potential in him? Like, as a coach, we kind of touch upon it with the Alex podcast. But you know the kids who are, you get a little bit more harder on, because you know they're D1 talent.
Yeah, so Mike, he ended up Division 2. Yeah. Yep, he ended up Division 2 AIC.
Collegiate, at least.
Yeah, I personally believe if I can get you in the 8th grade, man, I could develop you into a college athlete. You know what I'm saying? I think the biggest thing with me is the physical and the consistency and being able to lift, being able to run, and being on schedule. I think, but the biggest thing that kind of separates me from other coaches and other people, I think, is the mentality that gets instilled in the guys. And I think that's kind of what carries them over, and that's what gets them to the top. So I think if I can get a kid in the 8th grade or 7th grade and their parents, and which his parents and his brothers, who are my good friends, and I coach his other brother as well, David Torre, I think if I'm like allowed the freedom to kind of coach the kid is probably more likely than not going to be fine. You know, again, unless, you know, we start to try to baby him and you know, start to kind of veer off of, like, you know, keeping him on point. But for the most part, I think any kid I've had in that 8th grade who's been through the program, they're collegiate athletes. I think, yeah, we got a few now. So,
yeah, I think, like you said, I think the biggest thing was the Coach Carter contracts. They were 2.5. Like, God damn. I'm like, 2.5? You better get that shit higher than that if you want to play in college.
Right. Yeah. And that's a super minimum.
Yeah.
And the kids don't even understand that. And, you know, sometimes you have parents who push back. And I'm like, dog, man, a C average, man, you know, you're in for a world of hurt if you're complaining about a bare minimum. Yeah. And that's kind of my thing, is can't be complaining about the bare minimum.
The thing that kind of shocked me about that was when we posted the video on IG, you had kids from other schools commenting, yo, what, 2.5? Like, that's too much.
Right.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. Right?
That's crazy. And, I mean, I don't know. It's be foreseeing some spoiler alerts here. But you enforce those contracts.
Yeah, I enforce those contracts. I think that's, I don't want to say an issue I run into, but that's one of my biggest issues, is how strict I am, okay? And when it comes to the contracts, and people have to understand, man, when you're in an inner city school and you're in a school where the environment isn't conducive to positive learning or kids having the best character, you have to keep them on point with a contract, something that is structured, so that's making sure that the kid is on point, staying on point, and kind of maintaining good character and respect. So I think I run into the biggest problems that we run into is the off season. So the contracts last through the off season. And we have something called an active roster and an inactive roster. And that's where kind of most of my problems run into, because you can be on the team, right? Because you run into the kids who want to play football or who want to be good during football season. And then soon as football season's over, they're running amok, they're running around, they don't want to go to class, they don't want to do their homework, they don't want to do this, they don't want to do that. And that's just something I can't go for, especially when I'm trying to prepare you for college football or just being at the collegiate level. So yeah, man, that's just something that I run into a lot, is people kind of having trouble with me holding my standard all year round, and kids who can't follow the contract, kids who can't go to class, kids who can't do the right thing, they fall to that inactive roster, and then they have to kind of retry out for the team. And again, it gives you a different perspective as a kid, I feel like, and it kind of just keeps you on point and makes and lets you know that, yo, man, I'm, you know, I have to stay on point to be on this team. And it's like that in college. You got to stay on point to be on the team.
What are some things they have to end the offseason? Like, I know two, you said the front two rows for in school wise.
Yep.
But what are some bullet points in the offseason they have to hit?
Front two rows, you got to complete your classwork. You run into a lot of kids who go in there, don't complete their classwork.
I mean, in the offseason, though, so what are they doing to maintain that, like, to not worry about getting put in the inactive?
Being on point. So one thing I require is everybody has to play another sport. Everybody. Okay. So you have to either. So I'm also the track coach at Central. So you have to run track, you have to play another sport, or you have to be in our lifting program. You can't be doing nothing in the off season. That's the whole premise. And if you're on a team, you have to be eligible to be on the team. You know what I'm saying? If you're lifting, then I'll be keeping track of you. I make sure I have your attendance, and I make sure I'm keeping track of your grades. So as long as you are showing up every day, being consistent, and trying your hardest, you're good at Central. You know what I'm saying? Again, the kids who cut the corners and parents who want to cut corners, those are the ones who struggle at Central. Those are the ones who get on Facebook talking shit. Those are the ones who get on IG talking shit, because honestly, if I was a dad or a mom or a parent and my kid is at public school where, again, there isn't much, I'd want their coach to be on their ass as much as I am. So, you know, that's kind of the deal.
So how about if you have the next Quiddy Pay, he's failing, you ain't looking the other way?
So let me tell you something about Providence, Rhode Island. Let me tell you about Central. We have 15 Quiddy Pays in Central walking around who don't play football. And that's just it. So the Quiddy Pay story is, I don't want to say unfortunate, because, you know, you wish when I think about Quiddy Pay, I don't think about Quiddy Pay the body. I think about Quiddy Pay the mind, you know, the kid who does want to go out to work and do his best for 4 years for his mom, for his parents. You know what I'm saying? I think about him mentally. I don't think about his body. We have the 6'5 guys. We have the 6'6 guys. We have 6'7 guys walking around in the school who don't have a father, who don't have a mother, who are traumatized to nobody's business, and nobody really cares about them. And then when they do get the one black male figure in their life, it's like, I can't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm in a place where sometimes with some of these guys, I don't really get the support needed for guys who look like that. So, yeah, man, we have a lot of those guys who I do turn away who are not on the team. And I'm just, you know, I want to teach my kids character, man. And that's the main thing. And it's unfortunate, you know what I'm saying? But there has to be some give or take with me and the athlete.
So. How about who's on the team during the season and, you know, he fails right before playoffs? You mean look another way?
No. So, I mean, you guys will see, unfortunately, we do have...
smiling over there.
Unfortunately, we do have a kid who does get kicked off the team in the documentary. And it's a kid I love. And it's a kid I cared for deeply. And I still do care for. And, you know, it's just unfortunate because kids do need to learn lessons. You know what I'm saying? And there are consequences for everybody's actions. And, you know, I think a lot of people get confused that I'm not the parent. You know what I'm saying? I also have 50 other kids that I have to look out for. So it may not be good for your child per se, but maybe for the other 50 kids, it may be the right decision. And I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot of times in small situations and kids being dismissed from a program, dismissed from the team, suspended for X amount of reason because, you know, you got to have order when you're a leader. You know what I'm saying? How else are you going to be successful? So, yeah, man, that's something that was a very unfortunate part of my career. It was the first of its kind. And you know, it's something that still kind of lingers around to this day. You know what I'm saying? But you know, the kid's okay. He's doing good now. He's in college, and you know, I personally think it made him a better person than if he didn't go through that. You know what I'm saying? It's something that he always has to look back on. It's something that he always has to think about. And being on point is the right thing to do always. And I think it's something that he's going to carry for the rest of his life. So shout out to my guy Flex. I'm going to say his name, man. Shout out to my guy Flex, man. Love you, kid, always. No matter what anyone says, and, you know, people always kind of try to divide us from that situation. But, you know, I feel like deep down inside, he knows, you know what I'm saying, that that was something that should have happened at that moment. And it's something that definitely probably made him better. So shout out to you, kid.
Yeah, love you, bro.
Yep.
Do you think that makes the building blocks for the new Central as well, though?
It does. The standard is the standard, spoken by my guy Mike Tomlin, man. The standard is the standard, and I've built the program up to a point, you know, wins, losses, none of that matters. You know what I'm saying? Our culture is our culture. Our standard is our standard. You know what I'm saying? We're not getting off that for anybody, any kid, any talent level, anything. You know what I'm saying? We're going to do it the right way always. So that's kind of the model right now, and that's what we're sticking to. And I think that's why we've been able to be successful over the past couple of years.
And being behind the camera during those instances, is it tough for you to, like, are you getting attached at these moments now? You're there pretty much a good amount of your week. You're there.
Yeah.
So are you building relationships with these kids now and being like, when you have no say because, you know, you're not a coach, are they coming to you being like, yo, can you talk to Mike? Like, I know you know him. Are you getting involved in these situations now?
No, man. I don't get involved in any of that. But, you know, the situation that happened with Flex, it was very, very, very sad to see. And actually, I think when it happened, I wasn't filming on that particular day. But
you're like, fuck.
Yeah. So I wasn't able to capture what happened. But even to this day, man, like, me and Flex, we have a great relationship. I love the kid. Seen him plenty of times there on after that. You know, he would come to me and say, hey, what's up? I'd be like, hey, what's up, my guy? He's like, hey, can you do this for me? Can you, you know, pop out, make a little bit of mixtape for me? So, yeah, anything the kids need, he can hit me up whenever. I'll be there for him. But, yeah, as far as these kids being disciplined, there'll be plenty of times. Like, for example, you'll see parts of the documentary where somebody like Ty or Armis will even get, you know, kind of scolded by Mike. So it doesn't matter who you are, how good you are. You can get coached up real quick.
for sure.
But, yeah, I have a positive relationship with these guys. I say, yeah, like, I did get attached to them, but not to where something I was stepping in and trying to defend them. It was more just building a positive relationship. And even to this day, you know, when we released episode one, a lot of those guys just reached out to me and said, hey, thank you so much. You know, you really told our story. And I just said, hey, like, it was all you guys. I didn't do anything. I just captured it. So definitely grateful to have the positive relationship with those guys, for sure.
Yeah, man. I've been asking all the football guys who come on the podcast recently this to talk about scolding the top players in your team. I know damn well you've seen the Super Bowl. How would you react, Coach Mike, if Travis Kelce comes up to you, bumps you on the sideline because you ain't getting the ball, But then he gets the ball and he scores. In those situations, how are you reacting? You know, Super Bowl playoffs. Are you letting that slide or what's going on?
So here's my thing. And
you, like, you already had an answer to this.
So here's my thing. Travis Kelce is he, right? Him. First team all pro, multiple pro bowler, number one receiver, number one. You know, his thing is get me the ball. I revere for the day somebody's screaming, give me the ball. Get me the ball, coach. Get me the ball. And Travis Kelce is a guy who, when he gets the ball, he does something with it. So I'm somebody, and my kids, I flame them all the time because my kids will run their mouth, right? But when it's a 50-50 ball, they won't come down with it. You get what I'm saying? And my thing is, you can't talk unless you got a guarantee for me. Don't come and bump me. Don't come and ask me about a play. Don't come and ask me about anything, you know, unless you got a guarantee attached to it. So the kids kind of stay away from me because they know it better be a guarantee. I remember last 2 years ago, and this happened in season two, and I'll never forget it. My guy Armani, I love you, Armani. Shout out to Armani. Armani's like, yo, coach, we got folds. We got it. It's second down. And, you know, these kids teach me every day not to listen to them, by the way. It's second down. Again, downs matter. Again, kids don't understand. They think it's just a free world. So it's second down. And he's like, coach, we got folds. We got this play. Like, run it. Like, again, like, run it. He didn't bump me, but, like, he's one of those kids. Like, yo, run the play. Run behind me. You don't think this fucking kid fucking straight misses his guy? Like, straight ole, tackle for loss. And I want to chop his head off. But we're in the middle of the game, so I got to get the next play and chop his head off at the same time. Literally, because it's like, do not tell me what to do if there is no guarantee attached to it. So yeah. With a guy like Kelce, and I see a guy like Reed, I see a very secure coach. A coach who knew that his player was just fired up. A coach who knew what his player's capable of. And a guy who delivers and delivered. You know what I'm saying? So I think it has to be a perfect mesh when you have a kid who gets after a coach. That kid has to be that guy. You know what I'm saying? And you guys have to have that rapport. But, you know, nothing is worse than, again, in Armani. I love you, Armani. That's going to say, yo, coach, man, you know, give me the ball and then, you know, get tackled for a loss. Or, hey, coach, run behind me. And, you know, he goes and misses his guy. So, you know, I think that's the balance that you got to have. And I think Reed and Kelce, their relationship is A1 for being able to kind of get through that and, you know, winning the Super Bowl.
So Armani loses all privileges after that.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, I don't trust the kids anymore. No,
that's fucking funny, man. Have you ever had a time where you're like, you know what, Alex, you call the play real quick. I got to chew this kid up. I can't even call a play. I'm so fed up right now.
So it's so funny because we joke about that a lot now because last year, Alex, he's up top. So he's on the headset. So while I'm trying to chew a kid out, he's like, yo, coach, we got to get to the next play. And my guy, Avani, our quarterback last year, him and Alex used to do this thing. It was like, I don't know. They were just like telepathic with each other. Whereas I would want to delay a game so I could chew him up. And they're like, yo, no, coach, next play. Like, yo, no, coach, come on. Like, let's go. We got to get to the next play. Next play. Like, no, next play. And both of them would be in my ear screaming next play while I'm trying to chew him up for fucking up the play before. So yo,
them delay of games, though.
Yeah.
That was aggravating.
Yeah. So
I was going to aggravate if you guys episode one. I'm like, God damn, five interceptions, man. Flagging a big play.
Yo.
I can't even imagine you in those sidelines. Maybe those are the bloopers because you didn't show them on that first episode. No. How pissed off were you in that game?
I think that, so that's part of the whole one camera deal that's kind of unique to the documentary. And I guess that's why you can't see so much emotions because it's just Darren. You know what I'm saying? He can't shoot my emotions or anything. You'll see, I think, twice me kind of yelling at Flex. And you see me, if you read my lips, you'll see me say something along the lines of, you're throwing it to nobody. And another one when the kid fumbled and I'm irate. Bro. You can't see from the angle, but
I like, felt bad for him.
Yeah, if you flipped that camera, you would have thought I killed that kid. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. So that game was one of my toughest games, like still to this day, to kind of digest. But
Is it because of the expectations you guys had going into this season?
Yeah, you know, and you don't realize you still have so much to learn until you're in the situation. And, like, I'm in year, I think, what is it, 5 or 6? I don't know. And I'm like, okay, I finally got it figured out. And, like, in year one, I thought I had it figured out because we won the championship the year before. But I took over as head coach, and I got a whole bunch of other things I got to manage. And every single year is something new or something different, whether it's specific to football or specific to outside of football. It's just something that changes every single year. So I think as long as, like, coaches, players, videographers, podcasters, anybody, I think as long as you're willing to get better, accept your faults, accept the loss, take it as a lesson, and you're willing to kind of move on and shape it to get off on the next thing, you know, I think you're good. So I think every loss is a blessing for sure.
I think from my point of view, it was funny because when I first met Mike, he's like painting the vision of how good they are. And they got all these guys and we're going to be handy this year. So I start filming the first game and I'm like, yo, these dudes really lost. Like
you're like, damn, I got busy this season, actually.
I'm like, yo, what's going on?
Hey, now my schedule. I think my schedule just picked up.
But it was funny, though, because watching it, I'm like, okay, you know, I kind of have an idea already of how I want episode 1 to go. Like, he's gassing these guys up and they lose the first game. You know, are they going to bounce back or not? So, yeah, the story just started writing itself. It was really dope.
And crazy enough, Eric Rube was right. And
I thought that played very well into the documentary. It was his prediction was like pretty. Eric's usually wrong. Shout out to my guy Eric. Eric, he's a hit or miss on predictions. But that one was completely on point. And like I said, when I kind of went back and looked over, I'm like, damn, Eric, that was pretty good.
That was crazy when I met him. When I met with him at the journal, he actually pulled out his notes. He's like, yeah, this is what I wrote down right here. And he just, you know, started spitting what he was going to say. So
that's my question I had too. So how are you guys getting all the rights for all this? So like, how are you guys getting all like the announcers' voices over and stuff like that? That like before, or was that after, or how was that?
So a lot of that was actually during the season. My guy Ron Robert from Fans Only, shout out Ron.
Was able
to link up with him. And he said, hey, whatever commentary you need for the games, go ahead and use it. So he just gave it to us.
Our games are live streamed every week. Our home games are live streamed every week, so we were able to pull the commentary from the live streams and kind of sync it with the documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was, I mean, even the footage, same thing, anything you guys needed, the audio, the video, you guys needed. Yep. I mean, that was overall a great first episode, but that's something
production-wise, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
It's amazing to this day to just see the way how deep kind of produced it. And like, again, when you turn it on your TV and you watch it, you would not think it's one human with the camera, like at all.
Nope. I know Mike was coming. I know he was bringing someone else. I didn't know it was going to be the video guy. Have you thought about putting it to like Sundance, stuff like that? Because that's dope. That's definitely up there, man. Yeah, you never know. They do a lot of those like entrepreneur, you know.
I think we did submit it to Rhode Island Black Film Festival. We didn't hear back from them. And then
there's a million other ones, man.
Film Freeway. I put it on a few websites and stuff like that. We didn't hear back. It wasn't selected. And then I think after a while, too, I was like, you know what? I just want to give the kids what they want and give this to the community. Have it be something that they can go on YouTube for and look back on for the rest of their lives. You know, not everybody has a Netflix subscription or Hulu or Prime subscription. So, yeah, I think, you know, it'll get the traction that it needs eventually. And in the future, at some point, if I do get something on, you know, Showtime or HBO or whatever it is, you know.
I think a lot of that stuff came down to timing, too. I think when we were kind of because that was some of the avenues we were looking at first of how to get it out there and where to spread it. But a lot of that stuff was timing. It needed to be submitted at a certain time, at a certain point. And the editing process kind of was like, you know, it was pretty long. I said, Darian editing a whole movie.
Yeah, right.
So I wasn't even tripping on like when it got finished. And that's kind of why, like, you know, you're kind of getting it now, a rollout now. But like, you know, it took a while. So it's
not even a movie, but 8 movies pretty much.
Right. Yeah, right. You know what I'm saying? So it took a while. So that was just something that kind of just happened the way it happened. Right. But yeah, it was just a timing thing. But, you know, I think, like I said, I think once all eight come out, I think then we'll be able to kind of go from there. I think, again, once you can watch it from 1 to 8.
And we can do a part one of you guys on part two when you guys finish.
Right, oh, for yeah. sure.
After it comes back, we can come back. Dope. Maybe bring some of the main characters.
That'll be dope. Definitely. That'll be dope.
You're saying whoever the main characters are, you know. Yeah. First,
it'll probably be in school. So it'll probably have to be a little. Yeah, I don't know what time this would be slated to get done, but yeah, maybe we'll talk about it. I know most of those guys are in season though.
Yeah, college now. Yeah,
yep, they're all in college now. So
yeah, I mean that'd be pretty dope. And anyway, shout outs to you want to get from episode 1 and 2. I know you guys introduced Chris, the D line coach, our guy ACSE Alex. Yeah. Oh, how hard was this for you to admit? I had this as a question down that Alex is a gem. I feel like that took a lot out of you to Lord say.
Jesus. The good thing I can say is it was 4 years ago.
He's like, there, take that shit out.
Nah, shout out to my guy Alex, though, man. That's my business partner, man. That's my boy, man. That's my ace. So, shout out to my guy, man. He's been a great help in what we do. Also, shout out to my boy, Coach Rel. Yo, chill, Coach. Shout out to my boy, man. He's also my right hand man, and he's been holding down. Me and the squad ever since the Super Bowl year. He's our freshman head coach right now. So shout out to my dog. Shout out to Coach Rios. Shout out to Charlie Holiday. Shout out to the whole staff. Shout out to my new guy. Shout out to BJ. Shout out to Daryl. Shout out to Fresh. Shout out to Karamoko. Shout out to my boy Malik. You already know. My brother, my little brother, Big Leak. Yeah, man, shout out to everybody who was a part of this. Thank you, Central Family, administrators, all of everybody. And my biggest shout out to Providence.
Yes, sir.
Shout out to the city, man. I love the city like nobody's business. It raised me and made me who I am. And, you know, I'd be nothing without Providence. So I'm glad we were able to kind of come back and give this film, you know, and it's something that's going to be here forever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You'll always have it to watch and have it available. So I'm glad, you know, we were able to leave our legacy and show, you know, what us Providence guys can do.
Yeah, man. I definitely agree with that. So I've been trying to, you know, put up football in Providence, the city of Providence. You know, I think we've all been doing our best and how we can do it at each avenue. I appreciate you coming on, all the coaches to have who are uplifting the newer coaches that are willing to come on the podcast. Appreciate all you guys. My guy Charles came on recently too. Fredo, obviously Stanley.
Charlie. Shout out Fred. Shout out SD. Shout out Sauce. Shout out man. All my guys. All my breakthrough guys too.
Yeah, man. You know, I love anything I can do to uplift the city of Providence. And that's me. How about you, my guy Darian? What's your thoughts? Any, end off of that and your highs and lows of the first two episodes so far? Because they are out already, episode 1 and 2.
Highs and lows as far as like me personally, what I think, or just like the episodes in generally?
It's both. I mean, whatever you want to take it, however you want to take these.
I guess I could talk about highs and lows, the process of like editing the documentary. I think as somebody who's a creative, you're constantly battling with like, is my stuff good enough to actually put out there? You know, you got a lot of eyes on your stuff. So I think that was what was holding me back a lot personally. Also too, balancing, you know, like that family life and the documentary. I'm married. I got 2 kids. I have 2 daughters. My second daughter was born during season 2. So like I wanted to make sure, hey, like, am I still getting enough time with my wife? Am I still getting enough time with my kids? It's just a lot, man.
I know. Trust me.
Especially doing it all by yourself. So yeah, but I think, you know, with the timing and everything, it's really just God's timing. I think there was no better time than now to get it done and released. It's funny how we actually thought about releasing it. So I was actually working and I'm driving by PCTA and I see Coach Mike. He's over there coaching up and I see he got like 2 dudes running down the field doing up downs and whatnot. Like they must have been on punishment or something. So I circle back around, I pull up and I'm like, yo, you know what? And I get the thought, like, we should just throw this on YouTube. So right. I'm talking to him, and before I even say it, he's like, bro, let's just put this on YouTube. And I'm like, that's absolutely crazy. Like, we were just on that same frequency. So, yeah, man, I'm just super excited to release these episodes, and it's going to be fun for sure. Like Mike said, you guys are going to have it for the rest of your lives. It's going to be a lot of fun for y'all to look back on, for sure.
Yeah, man, it's a good thing. Like, even, like, with the pod, I was just like, you know what, I'm going to start putting out episodes. When I first started doing it, the first couple episodes, My friend's like, I don't know, man. Like, it's not that good. And I don't know who knows. It's like, it's never going to be good enough, bro. Yeah, you just got to put it out. Yeah, right. At least it's out there forever. Who cares? Right. Yeah, who cares, bro? Right,
right, just put yourself out there. And then also, too, like, you got to realize what your content, like, what you're doing right now, you're doing it in a way that separates you from everybody else. The way I do my videos and photos, I do it in a way that separates, like, myself from everybody else. And that's what's going to, like, bring people to want to, you know, be on your show or book photo shoots and do documentaries with you or whatever it is. So
it may be unique to yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, all know Mike's unique to himself. So, yeah. Mike, what is your high and low of episode 1 and 2? My prediction, I guess, for the low SK game has to be
absolutely
low.
Man, I might have been the lowest point in my life, man. Real quick, bro, I'm telling you, man, that was crazy. But you know, again, okay, so the episode would have came out, and you know, I think the high was, you know, we win the next game. You know what I'm saying? It's people underestimate. Again, we played a whole season with our quarterback. This is 2 years. We played a whole offseason. We've done everything. And we're expecting to have him for the year. And to just lose him like that and to kind of create an offense and to kind of, again, get your kids to buy into a new system in the beginning of the year, buy into a new kid. That was like, and again, to win that game, that was really big for me, man. That was one of my happiest moments as a head coach, is kind of seeing that type of adversity or kind of seeing that adversity so early and kind of getting through it and seeing my guys kind of battle through it. So I thought, like, the transition from season one, again, everybody, I have 100 people literally, that damn SK game, man, SK, man, South Kingston. I got my boys from Arizona, like, man, goddamn South Kingston, man. I'm like,
like it happened yesterday. Yeah, bro.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
crazy.
yeah. Like it just happened. And then I can't wait for everybody to see the Cranston West game because, again, that feeling that you get from watching SK, you're like, damn. And then to lose the quarterback and then to be successful when I don't want to say you shouldn't be successful, but you know, it's just something that you like. As a viewer, you're like, yo, let's go. Let's go, boys. Like, damn, finally, man. You guys are rocking. Like, all right. Now I'm seeing something. So it's really happy. Episode 2 is a really happy episode. And, you know, I think that's just my kind of like my low and my high is the loss, transitioning into losing our quarterback and then, you know, kind of overcoming that adversity and kind of getting our getting back on the winning side of things.
Hey, man, it's Raylan Ifeo, the tale of a night, Rhode Island football story. You shot that too?
So that is Danielson, my boy Bebe Clairvoyant.
Oh, my guy. Yep.
So he took that photo and then we went ahead and made the
yeah, he was our original cameraman. So you know what I'm saying? For all you guys who think that's y'all cameraman,
right.
It's a lie, man.
He's rocking with us.
Yeah,
first.
Man. That's our original guy right there, man.
He's always out there hustling.
Absolutely, man. That's my boy.
And then I actually do want to give one more shout out to Moses Muse. So Moses is actually the first kid that I ever made a mixtape for. It was a volleyball mixtape. If it wasn't for this kid, I'm telling you, my page wouldn't have gone anywhere. Mike, I don't even think you would have saw my work. So right. Special shout out to you, kid.
Shout out to Moses, man.
Appreciate you,
great kid.
My guy, Jack.
Same alum.
Yep. Yes, sir. He's on the pod. One of the OGs in the pod, too. Mm-hmm. Yep. He actually reached out to come on the pod, and I was like, you know, I vetted him. Everyone's like, nah, he's a good dude. And I'm like, all right, he can come through then. Came through with Angel and Carl, actually. I was going to say, was that the year when you guys almost beat Hendy, and then last game, the last play of the game, right?
There we go.
We don't want to talk. We don't want to talk about that.
I was at that game. Yeah. I remember watching. I was like, God damn. I was like, oh, Central's legit. Central's legit. Now they're better than Hendy. And I'm like, damn, all right, I'm going to go to this game. And I was like, oh shit. And then the last play of the game, I was like, oh, no, Mike must be fucking eating.
I don't want to say part, but
we can take this part out if you want to, you know, hold it off.
Definitely
take, right? Yeah, take this part out. Because
a lot of people are going to be pissed off when they watch that.
When they see that game, because again, we go from winning and then
it's because it's like it's literally like a Hard Knocks. If you don't watch football, if you're not into the games, I'm not going to Google and be like, okay, what happened this thing?
Right.
And you're going to wait organically to see what happens.
Right.
So I'll take this part out, but I guess we keep it off for a blooper.
Right.
When it comes up in that
thing. Right.
So, yeah, it's a Hendy game. What was your thoughts on that Hendy game?
So the thing about the Hendy game, bro, is that first year, we weren't equipped to play them. A lot of what I do is psychological warfare with my kids. I can have the worst team on the planet, and I'll make them believe that we are, we belong, right? They were just overmatched, overpowered, bigger kids, better kids.
Offensive guys, defensive guys.
Offensive guys, defensive rested. Guys, both sides of the ball, special teams. I think at the time they had the Gatorade Player of the Year, Brandon Duran, mm-hmm. fucking MLB.
So he's
not,
a beast.
Yeah, nah, he's yeah, a you, beast. Yeah, you remember he was a beast. We had nothing of that, and we lose our quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That game we also lost Jaden that game, and you'll see that part of losing yep. Jaden came with a broken play.
We didn't have Jordy either.
Yeah, we didn't have Jordy because of COVID. So we were missing so much that the game shouldn't have been close. It shouldn't have been close, but it's that psychological warfare that I'm talking about with our kids. That our kids didn't take no for an answer. They didn't. It didn't matter who didn't play. It nothing mattered. They just gave it their all that game, and you know, and when you lose on the last play, 7 seconds, something like that, and you know your kids gave you all, ain't you know what I'm saying? You can't be mad at that. So mm-hmm. I think that game. My kids showed me that we belong. You know what I'm saying? They could have easily took, and I don't want to, you know, shit on other public schools, but coaches do cop out when that game comes up. That's what I do know. Coaches will tell their kids, well, it's Hendricken. Well, you know, hey, you know, let's try to stay in there for a quarter or two quarters, and you know what I'm saying? It wasn't none of that shit for me. You know what I'm saying? And I think us taking them down to the wire kind of set the stage for the program. You know what I'm saying? We haven't beat those guys yet, but we've been closer than anybody's I've seen in the recent history. And most recent, I'll say it straight up, we got cheated by the refs. You know what I'm saying? So
that game?
No, the most recent game. Playoff game. So we're there. We're knocking at the door. It's only a matter of time. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, all these coaches... These dudes got 20 years on me, 25 years on me, 30 years on me. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, this is year five. You know what I'm saying?
Year five. And year five, so we got the schedule right here. The upcoming schedule for the year.
Yep.
So year five, you're saying, what should we expect for the upcoming Central year? Starting the year off against who? Manchester
from New Hampshire.
Oh, wow. Look, you guys going out of state.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. We just started that last
two out of state games.
Yeah, no, three. And then we got Thanksgiving.
But
we
start
got,
the season two
yeah,
out of,
yeah, to, yes. yeah, to start the season. We got Manchester out of New Hampshire. They're a little solid squad. Milton, they won the MIAA D3 National Championship last year. And if you know anything about Mass, you know their D3 isn't the same as our D3.
No, at all. It'll be a D1 over
there. Yeah. So we got a pretty good two games to start the season. We got Lawrence High School next week. For a scrimmage. So, you know, we just try to prepare our guys, again, ultimately for that Hendricken game. You know, for that Hendricken-North Kingston game, we anticipate those two teams being in that top four at the end of the year. What you can expect from the Knights is we're going to fucking run the ball, man. We're going to run it down your throat. We're going to run it at you. You're going to know we're going to run the ball, and we're still going to run the ball. Mm. So, little different pace than what we have been doing. We've been mixing it up a lot traditionally, but ain't no mixing it up this year. Y'all going to know what we're doing, and y'all got to stop it. So that's what we're doing, and I'm sticking to it. I got a great carousel of backs, Ramel Richard Bridges, and Javon Tager, along with a nice carousel of fullbacks, along with a really, really, really good offensive line this year. So we're going to run the ball, we're going to play defense, and we're going to keep it in front of you, and we're going to limit mistakes. So, you know, and you ain't going to see all them passes that you've seen in SK ever again. So, yeah, man, the schedule is a prime, man, for us to get the job done.
So you're saying that ever again, just even if – how about if you had a quarterback that could sling it? I'm not saying I don't know who the quarterback is now.
Sure.
No offense,
yeah,
that is.
Nah, yeah, I'm nah. Saying, I mean, like, Evan knows what's up. Evan, he's a fourth running back. You know what I'm saying? He ran track this year. He got his body right. He lifted, and you know he can throw. But you know, it just comes down to efficiency. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I think to win football games right now, you have to be efficient. And I think that's where a lot of Hendricken's success comes. Is they're efficient. They're efficient because they run the ball and they have a strong offensive line. Again, we've built up to the point now, again, through strength and conditioning, through off seasons, to where I put our front against anybody straight up. We used to have to do a lot of things like mask two kids, a lineman here, and add this. But I think this is the first year I got five guys who can go straight up with anyone, and that's a pretty big deal. Well, six linemen who can go straight up with anyone, and that's a pretty big deal this year. So, yeah, man, I'm just kind of looking forward to a new style of football. It'll be very boring, and I think one thing we'll get a lot is, these guys run the same fucking play every play. Guys,
sound like Kendrickson.
Yeah, exactly. Right? You know, so, yeah, man, we're at the point where we're ready to go this year.
When you first started, is that something you learned where you're like, were you one of those people actually, like, dissing Kendrickson, where you're like, they run the same goddamn plays, and you're like, I'm going to be different. And now you're like, you know what?
No.
I see their game plan.
I'm a student of the game. Like, when I say I'm a student, it may not seem like it, but sometimes I'll sit down on YouTube for hours and I'll go down rabbit holes of offenses and defenses from the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s. Mm-hmm. And anytime somebody's good or somebody is dominant, the first question I ask myself is why? I don't discredit them. So my thing was figuring out, why are they so good? You know what I'm saying? And obviously, you know, they have an unlimited amount of kids and they have an unlimited amount of resources, but there are some integral pieces that does make Kendrickson successful because, I mean, LaSalle is a private school too. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, they didn't whoop LaSalle's ass for the last 15 years or whatever it is, whatever the record is in the last 10 or 12 years. So there is something very distinctive about Kendrickson that makes them more successful than the other private, you know. Even if they're all boys school, you know, I think that gives them the slight edge over LaSalle. But, you know, I still feel like, you know, the gap shouldn't be that far in between the two.
It's a pretty big gap.
Yeah, you know.
Brandon was there 16-20. Their rival was more NK than LaSalle.
Yeah.
They beat the shit out of LaSalle every single year. It was even close.
Right. And I don't, you know, not to really talk shit or like talk anybody down, but I just don't kind of understand how that's possible when, you know, you kind of on the equal, you're kind of on the same playing field. So
do you think Kendrickson should be in Rhode Island anymore? Do you think it's, as a central head coach, do you think it's benefiting you guys, or you think they should be out in a, you know, different division and then make you guys better, make it'll make Rhode Island better for Kendrickson?
So I think, or better. So I think it's a double, I hear what you're saying. So I think it's a double-edged sword, and it's two sides. For me, it makes us better. Right. I think anytime you can play up to your competition, that's going to bring the best out of your guys. I also have seen the best recruiting playing them. And people kind of get confused because we've lost to them. We've lost to LaSalle. We lost to North Kingston. And it's kind of like people look at me like, yo, you guys are playing them for no reason. You guys playing them. No, my kids are fucking getting recruited. Like, you know what I'm saying? My kids are getting recruited from these games, playing in these big games, competing in these big games. And when you are at a central that's not supposed to win these games, that's not supposed to even be competing with these games, you have these coaches that now they're looking deeper into that roster of like, damn, what's making you guys tick? What's making you guys go? So I think playing them has busted the doors open for us as far as a recruiting standpoint. And, you know, they're Division III and they're Division II schools mostly. You know, we don't really get FCS and Division I-A type players, but the players we do get and we do develop, they are able to go to school off of these games. So I think that's the one side to it. I think the other side to it is the other public schools. I'm very well aware that not every, that all public schools are not created equal. I'm also very aware that all public school coaches, you know, aren't Mike Washington. You know what I'm saying? And that's tougher for the public school that has to play Kendrickson when you don't have a Mike Washington or you don't have a younger guy on the staff. You don't have, you know what I'm saying, the things that can, you know, make a kid tick mentally. You know what I'm saying? So it's tougher for the other public schools because now they kind of just have no chance at the state title. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of what it's become is our race to beat Kendrickson and to win the state championship, LaSalle's race to beat Kendrickson, you know what I'm saying, and kind of everybody else. And I throw North Kingston in. I love North. We haven't beat North Kingston, and you know, it's no disrespect, but you know, our kids kind of just don't get up out of bed playing them. And again, like I said, it's no disrespect. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, they've handled business against us and they beat us. I don't got to win against North Kingston, but it's very hard to get my kids out of bed to play North Kingston compared to a Kendrickson. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's just the competitive environment that we have. And it's not to say those guys aren't competitors, but you know, we know Kendrickson is the undisputed best. And like, I think in the last 3-4 years, if you can ask anybody, name one team you think is going to beat Hendrickson or be close to beating Hendrickson or kind of who's going to knock them down. And I don't think you can find one person that won't say Central.
Even at Breakthrough, I think it was, I can't recall this, all coming year, it was last year. Like, we got Central this year. I'm like, for real?
Yeah.
Like, even, like, no offense, I'm just like, what?
That's right,
like,
right.
You don't really hear that often. It's always Hendrickson.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Right, right. So I think we've kind of built it up.
Even, like, I'm not trying to stir the pot over here. No, go ahead. But you guys don't even have that when you got Space LaSalle. It's like,
it's not the same because, I mean, you know, like I said, Hendy, they've been handling LaSalle so much. And the thing with LaSalle is we, I don't want to say we fight for recruits, but the best Providence kids go to LaSalle.
Yeah.
They go to, they spill out to Hendrickson too, but the best Providence kids go to LaSalle. So I think us and LaSalle is kind of more of a recruiting thing and a more of who we get. So, you know, I think I want to beat LaSalle. So, you know, we can have our best players from Providence stay, you know, in Providence and not go to private, you know what I'm saying? And then across the way, we just want to beat the best. So it's kind of two different battles that we fight.
What do you say to the kids who are eighth grade right now on the fence? They can still transfer to Central. So what are you saying to these kids, like, you know, stay at Central?
Okay, I'm be pretty candid, man. I think you can look at our track record and see that we take care of our kids. You know what I'm saying? I think you look at the guys who are at 6 feet and under, we take care of our kids. We make sure our kids go to school, make sure our kids end up at the D3, D2 level. We make sure we're working out year round. We make sure we take care of our kids. I think something that I see in a lot of the private schools is they don't take care of the kids who aren't the best kids. My thing is I have 30 kids. I take care of one like I take care of 30. Other schools, they got top three kids. They taking care of those top three kids. Them other 27 kids are suffering. And those are the kids who kind of fall in the cracks at these private schools, and they don't play until their junior or their senior year when they could be developing at a Central and, again, ending up at a Division III, Division II. I see a lot of kids paying for high school, and this is the craziest thing ever. I see a lot of kids paying for high school with parents who swear by it. You know, they're paying for high school, they're paying for private school, just to end up where my kids end up. You know what I'm saying? I want to know the math. I want to know the numbers. And you know what I'm saying? You have parents who claim education. Man, you know, we know about, you know, some of the courses that they have in these private schools. You know, we know some of the remedial courses that some of the athletes kind of go into, and they're not expected much academically, and they are there to actually play football, and they're not there for academics, and they're not looking to take AP classes, and they're not looking to go to Ivy League. They're actually there for sports, and, you know, parents kind of do the little cover-up to say, oh, I'm there for academics, but we know what it is. But usually, again, some kids, they end up at the same place where we end up, or a lot of kids just don't go. Like, look at the numbers of the kids who went to LaSalle who ain't end up in college at all. You know what I'm saying? Especially from when I grew up. You know what I'm saying? The youth, as much talent that's been through those doors who ain't touched D2, D3. Why? You know what I'm saying? You got to start to ask yourself real questions. And you know what I'm saying? I know that these questions won't be asked or answered until a real one kind of comes up and poses the question. But, you know, why not Central? 8th grader, 7th grader. Why not? You know what I'm saying? Why not?
Agreed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the biggest thing. Don't you want to beat the best? You know?
No, for sure. And I have a question that you guys can both have thoughts on this because you went to Tolman. Does your loyalty stay to Central, Mike? Because seems like there might be a spot everyone's going to want, that Pawtucket High School job. If it ends up Pawtucket High School, all the best kids from Shea, Pawtucket, and Tolman on one team. Will that be something that intrigues my guy, Coach Mike? You know, you think about that, get your thoughts, help on my guy, Darian. How do you feel that's going to help out Pawtucket? Because you played at Tolman, you said. Yep. So yep. Tolman and Shea under one roof, how do you think that's going to work out those first couple of years?
I think that's going to be absolutely insane. Well, first, I mean, I don't know if anybody else knows this or if it's still around now, but there's that whole Bucket East, Bucket West beef when I was going there. Yeah, so I remember, like, freshman year, walking home from school around the corner of D'Angelo's, every single day there were kids fighting. Somebody's getting pepper sprayed, arrested. So I think it's going to be rocky for the first few years. But if they get the right coaching staff in there, those guys should be completely elite. Like,
I don't know. I thought there was a coach around me. I don't know.
Oh.
So, guys, I'm going to go on record to say I would never coach in a Bucks game. ever.
Legitimately, though, like that, those sports are going to be good. Soccer, basketball, football.
For sure.
They're going to be competing, bro, because I think
if all the Pawtucket team stay home in Pawtucket.
It's like the way the teams are now, like they have a little bit of dogs on each team, and then once they combine them, like all those guys will be together, and then all the kids will have to compete.
I think it's cheating. Nah, man, I don't say it's something I'm scared of, but it's definitely something that like the foresight says like that is on the way. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's gonna force us to step up our game a little bit. But I also think it's very important of who gets that job. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? If they do what I think they're going to do, put a rinky-dink coach in there to kind of, you know, be a cover.
Can't do it.
And, I you know, so you got to put the right guy in there. You know what I'm saying?
So you're saying his loyalties to...
My loyalties to Cent. Yeah, it's Cent. I wouldn't even coach football if it wasn't at Central, believe it or not. I'd go on and with life and go enjoy my life, man. I'm a pretty simple guy. This is more of a social work. Again, you hear me saying the trailer, Survivor's Remorse. Mm-hmm. I literally have Survivor's Remorse, being one of the only kids to make it out. And, like, again, be able to leave scotch-free and, like, literally in my soul, like, I feel like I'm leaving my city behind. I feel like I'm leaving kids behind. I'm leaving people behind. I'm leaving information behind. You know what I'm saying? I think once I get to the place where I feel like I've given as much information as I possibly could, then I can walk away from Essential and kind of go and veer off into life. But until then, nah. But yeah, Pawtucket schools, I think it's all about hiring the right guy, hiring the right fit, somebody who's going to be there year round. Because again, if you're going to coach football for 4 months, dog, you ain't going to beat us. I'm going to let everyone know that right now. You ain't going to beat us again unless you're a private school. Straight up. Yeah. It ain't going to happen. So, yeah, man, I think Pawtucket has to do right by that hiring process and not just hire, you know, the first Pawtucket name or whatever it is. I think they should have a pretty good stipend for the head coach.
That's going to be a good position if you get done well.
You know, but you know.
Saints is going to be fucked.
They got to support. Saints is going to be fucked.
Saints is fucked. For sure. For what reason why did you go to Saints? And I'm a Saints alum.
Right.
For what reason why would you go to Saints?
Yeah. Saints
the campus is going to be fucking brand new, beautiful.
Yeah.
The teams are going to be nice. Yeah. For what goddamn reason would you go to Saints?
Yeah, that's going
to
be.
I don't know, but I might have to capture a little bit of that.
Yeah, Pawtucket's good. Yeah, what is it, 4 years or some shit like that, man? I'm trying to, please, I ain't even.
So what were your thoughts on, would you be fighting for that Providence job or just strictly the Central? If there was a Providence high school, hypothetically, probably would never happen. If there was.
They wouldn't do that because they know how strong we'd be. I think Providence is a divide and conquer swag. I think they make sure to keep Providence divided. I think they make sure to have propaganda that divides Providence. I think,
but if hypothetically, if it did happen,
I think they do something funny. You know, there's, you know, Mount Pleasant coach, classical coach. I think it's Juanita Sanchez, and then there's the Hope coach Pierre. So I think ultimately we'd all be fighting for the same job. How do you determine who is the best fit? I think that's the biggest question. I think everybody has strengths to them. You know what I'm saying? I clearly have the youth. That's the strength. You know what I'm saying? I know I can get a team, get kids together. My guy at Hope, he has the experience. He has collegiate experience. I know Chris McCall. He has a championship or two or three, I think, at the lower level. And I can't really speak too much for the Juanita Sanchez coach.
I think that team would compete with Hendrickson. I think they would be little win.
What, Providence?
Yeah.
We compete with Hendrickson. We're one team, man. You know what I'm saying? So I have no doubt that if they even try to merge two teams, that, you know, we'd be dominant. But no, they don't want to do that.
Yeah, man. So you know, it's August 18th today, filming this. My guy, Darren, you have any you know, anything to look forward to the end of 2024? By the time you guys come back, maybe 8 weeks, 10 weeks, NFL season should be starting. So I'm not sure if you have any NFL predictions or anything you want to talk about in your
Jets.
You're a Jets fan?
Yeah, we got beef.
Oh, we got beef.
Yeah, we got beef.
Yeah, we got beef. Yeah, we got beef.
I don't really have any predictions, man. I don't really have a favorite team per se.
So how about the personal life, you know, the business life? Anything we should be looking forward to besides the documentary here?
I'm just looking forward to grow my photography portfolio a little bit more. So I did a shoot yesterday Photos came out really good. It was dope. It was an actual model I know. He went to high school with me. He's a model now. He's been on a few commercials, and I think he was like doing a shoot for like Law and Order or something like that.
Dope.
So yeah, gonna expand that photography portfolio, and then, you know, just keep learning. You learn something new every day with videography and photography, that's for sure. So
yeah, best way to get in touch with you, your IG.
Yes, my IG is Evelyn3_ and then edits. Follow that. Hit me up for any business inquiries. I got you.
And man, how about you, my guy Mike? Any last predictions for NFL Central and documentary you want to touch upon to end this pod?
NFL Jets, we're going to the AFC Championship off rip.
Mm-hmm. Us, all right, I'll greet us and you guys in Miami, though. So we'll see.
Y'all got to play in the cold. We got to see that. That's what I want to see.
We do. You know, no argument saying? That. I was at that game freezing my fucking ass off in Kansas City.
yeah, right.
It's fucking cold. So.
So I hope Rodgers stays healthy. Breece Hall is my favorite running back. Garrett Wilson, he's amazing. So I just love the Jets personnel.
How about Reddick just fucking you guys?
Huh?
Hassan Reddick just fucking you guys over.
To be honest, though, I'm not even like, I think we're good enough as a whole to not need him. I think what are you?
He'll help out, though.
10 seconds? He'd help.
He's going to play still. I mean, what are you going to do?
He'd help, but I mean, I just think our roster is so stacked where he's kind of doing himself a disservice a little bit by not showing up to camp. But, you know, everybody 100%. Wants his money. That's his prerogative. I'm just a fan.
Mm-hmm.
For Central, one game at a time this year. You know, obviously we want to get to the main goal, you know what I'm saying, but we want to keep the main thing this year, and that's being 1-0. That's what we want to focus on every single week, being 1-0. So I don't even want to look past that, but being 1-0 every week is just the goal, and that's going to be the theme this year. Personal, I want to keep growing the channel. Team Dollar TV, please subscribe, like, follow. I want to keep growing the channel. I got some crazy stuff in the works for the channel. We're just going to be dropping a lot more content regarding some of the stuff that's kind of going on this year, along with the documentary. So I just want to grow the channel. My business, Recovery Rhode Island, at Recovery Rhode Island. We're still doing rehab, soft tissue injuries, making sure guys are healthy, making sure guys are mentally healthy. You know, just making sure we're doing our service to the general public and the Rhode Island athletes, and keeping them healthy and preparing them for their season.
Yes, sir. Make sure you tap into that Tale of a Night.
Yep.
Hey, Rhode Island football story, baby. On his YouTube, the banners mainly from the graphic. So any last words on the whole purpose of this podcast was the Tale of a Night. So episode 1 and 2 came out of season 1. Any closing words, anything, spoilers, any cliffhangers you want to give for that Tale of a Night for the fans?
Just stay tuned, man. I think every single episode, so it's obviously 8 episodes. There's a whole story of the 8 episodes combined, but every single episode has like a little mini story in of it. That's going to keep you on the edge of the seat, or kind of keep you interested and be like, dang, what happens next? Or you're going to learn something about a character. There's an episode where you're going to learn a lot about Coach Mike, and you're going to be like, oh, shoot, like, I didn't know that. And it will probably, you know, certain characters, I feel like with documentaries you watch, you might not like them at some point, or like, you know, why did he say that, X, Y, and Z? And then you see like, okay, like, this is the way they grew up. This is what they went through. And you kind of see how their mind works, and you get a different perspective of that person. So, yeah, definitely just stay tuned. Watch all the episodes, subscribe to the channel, all that. You're going to love it. Even if you don't like football, you're going to love this documentary.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, man. It was a dope episode 1 that I seen. It's, like I said, it's like Netflix worthy. You know, it feels like I was watching it, like, on a streaming service as Netflix or Hulu. So I'm interested. I'm intrigued for episode 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, baby. So let's get it. Appreciate you guys coming through in the pod. My guy, Mike and Darian. Make sure you tap into their social medias underneath them. Their YouTube, baby. Let's get it. Like, subscribe, send it to the moon. Esh, get it, baby.
Appreciate you, bro.
Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you, bro.
That was dope.
It was a lot of fun.